You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Under the Public Finance Act, the government is required to release a report on child poverty as part of the budget process. The report for 2026, released last week, shows that New Zealand is far from on track to meet its goal of reducing child poverty to 6% by 2028. One of the key measures of this, material hardship, was not even able to be estimated by the Treasury, but was calculated to be sitting at 14.3% in the financial year 2024 to 2025. With community providers, such as food banks, reporting increased hardship in the community, it seems highly unlikely that the government will meet previous targets for reductions in child poverty. So, to speak on the government's approach so far and what the recent child poverty report tells us, I was joined by Honorary Associate Professor at the University of Auckland, Susan St. John. Kia ora, Professor Susan St. John. So, first of all, I guess I'll start with the big question. Are we taking child poverty seriously in this country?
Well, if you looked at the child poverty report and the budget, you'd have to say that we are not, that it has been downplayed considerably. In fact, there's almost no emphasis on it at all in the budget. So it's of great concern that something in the Act called Child Poverty Reduction Act, that obliges government to report on progress in achieving goals on reducing child poverty and to set out plans of what it's going to do and how it's going to reach the goals in the future, that's all just been bypassed in this budget.
I mean, what does that tell us about the legislation, I guess, that we've got in place, that all this can be just bypassed? I mean, is this telling us that we need some stronger safeguards in place to make child poverty reduction a priority?
Well, it was a very hard-fought event to get that Act passed with bipartisan support. The problem is that this government doesn't believe that the solutions to child poverty require it to do anything, except, as they say, to get the economy growing, because it's going to solve child poverty. Well, that's no answer at all. So it's a fundamental problem with the underlying different ideology here, I think. And I don't know how you... The Act was celebrated as something that really was going to make sure that children were no longer invisible, that their needs were prioritised and that everybody was on the same page. Well, have we failed there, and what would be a new model? I don't know.
Now, you mentioned in your Substack article that the budget lays out 10 priorities. Did child poverty make it into that list?
Well, not at all, not even mentioned. And the first priority was to get fiscal balance and to reduce public debt. Well, that is a very arid aspiration, in my view. And if you're going to get the economy growing, you need a healthy and well-supported, growing young population who will contribute to the workforce. And what that is, we're going in exactly the opposite direction. We're creating more ill health amongst the young, more mental depression, more sense of hopelessness, lack of educational achievement. All of the negative things we're achieving are going to make the economy worse, not better.
Now, I'm just going to read out from the report. It has a section mentioning Budget 2026 initiatives that can have an effect on the level of child poverty. And I'll just get your opinion on what you think this overall kind of means for child poverty. I'll just read them out now. So there's going to be increased rent that will need to be paid by people in social housing. The accommodation supplement will increase by $10 and $30 per week. There is the $50 per week fuel in work tax credit. there will be a reduction in the max RTE for temporary additional, or the max rate, sorry, for temporary additional support from 30 to 25%. Now, that's supposedly to offset high inflation, creating increases to the weekly hardship payments. But I'll just note that the government early in its term tied benefits to the CPI rather than wage growth. They've also mentioned that there'll be between 1.6 and 2.5 additional state houses, greater employment support for sole parents, continuing the school health or the school food program, and there'll be more support, or there'll be ongoing support to food banks. Now, looking at those initiatives, what kind of picture do you think that paints?
Well, many of the things that you've read out are actually negative for child poverty, and some of the things that might look positive and are spun to look positive are very dubious indeed. For example, the case management of sole parents at $93 million for the next 2 years to get them off the benefit and into work, because work is the solution to their poverty, and the optimistic costing of what they think they're going to save by doing that is very questionable. But just to think about one or two of the things that you've mentioned, there's the fuel subsidy, $50 of the in-work tax credit that they're pointing to, and then they go on to say that it is because of that that they can show that there is a slight reduction in the income measure of child poverty for the next year after the Treasury have modelled this. But that's very, very cynical, because it's a temporary measure, and that $50 only goes to a very select group of families who happen to not be on any benefit of any kind. And it is a payment for children, but it manages to leave out 250,000 or so of the most needy children.
And I suppose it also neglects the, I guess, stimulus for the fuel subsidy payment, in that there is this increased hardship because of the current fuel crisis. So to present it as improving the situation rather than potentially bringing the situation back to the baseline where it was before the fuel crisis starts out seems a bit disingenuous.
You've absolutely nailed it there. It's actually got nothing to do with a desire to decrease child poverty, or nor will it have a meaningful impact on actual child poverty. As you say, it is to compensate certain families, narrowly defined, for the fuel price increase.
So how are we measuring child poverty? Or how is the government measuring child poverty? And does that mesh with what we're seeing out in the community?
Well, it's difficult to measure child poverty, and the surveys on which the figures are based are always a bit out of date. So we don't actually have the current situation reflected in the last child poverty figures that we have, and it's difficult to model it going forward as to what will be the picture in the future. In the Act, there are 10 measures. There are four top measures, of which three are the ones that are concentrated on. Maybe just briefly talking about the first one, which is material hardship. It's the proportion of children found to be in material hardship based on the fact that they don't have access to a range of absolute basics for their well-being. Now, if we look at what the figures are showing us, that rate of child poverty has been climbing in the last couple of years. It did come down a little bit in the early 2020s under the Labor government policies, but we're going in the wrong direction, and there is absolutely nothing in this budget to suggest that that trend upwards will be decreasing in any meaningful way. So that's all very discouraging and quite a disgrace for a developed country to be in this situation.
So what do you think that we need to be doing? Now, recently over the weekend, the finance minister in an interview mentioned that, well, we could double benefits, which would have a big impact on reducing child poverty, it wouldn't be in the fiscal interest of the country, for example. What would you propose that we do?
Well, one of the things that we could do is to fix working for families so that the in-work tax credit part currently doesn't go to the very poorest children. It's an obvious thing to do. We should transfer the in-work tax credit into the family tax credit, which does go to all children. And by doing that, you would be providing nearly 100 or 150 under the current policies extra to the very worst off families. And there are other things that we should be doing with working for families. But it's not only improving incomes, it's obviously making sure that the minimum wage is adequately adjusted, making sure that there isn't harsh clawbacks when people earn a little bit of extra income, making sure that housing is suitable and affordable, and a raft of other things, of course, that need to underpin a serious approach to reducing measures like the material hardship measure.
And I mean, has there been any work on a more long-term plan to reduce or hopefully eradicate child poverty?
I can't see it under this government at all. There is nothing in the pipeline to suggest that they believe that improving incomes at the lower end is something that will help child poverty and is what they're committed to doing. Quite the reverse, as you could hear in what the minister said on the Q&A program. So doubling benefits would reduce child poverty, but implicitly she is saying that wouldn't be very good for the family because they would then become dependent on benefits or dependent on the state. So it's not seeing it at all from the lens of the poor child who doesn't have proper clothing in the middle of winter or doesn't have access to good food, fresh fruit, vegetables, and can go to the doctor when needed because the parents can afford to drive the car. None of those issues cross her mind. It's all about achieving some sort of fiscal outcome, which of course is based on priorities. What actually does matter to this government? And you'd have to say it's protecting the top end of the income and wealth distribution.
That was Honorary Associate Professor at the University of Auckland, Susan St. John, on the recent child poverty report released by the government.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.